Welcome to an IBM webcast on storage virtualization featuring Mark Farley, president of IDEX, Inc., and author of the popular Building Storage Networks. Joining Mr. Farley are IBM experts Laura Sanders, vice president, IBM System Storage Products and Solutions, and Tony Pearson, manager, brand market strategy, IBM System Storage. In this segment, you will hear a discussion of how you can get started with IBM storage virtualization, the how of storage virtualization. At the end of the webcast, you will be given a URL where you can download the first and second segments of this webcast, the why and what of storage virtualization. And now, Laura Sanders.
I would like to hear from both Mark and Tony on, okay, so how do you get started? I mean, it's got lots of different benefits, but virtualizing, you know, it hasn't happened in your environment yet. It's probably not something that you said, oh, okay, well, I'm going to do that tomorrow, and here's where I do first. I know we found in the beginning with Fan Volume Controller, a lot of people brought it in just to do data migration and went, wow, that worked pretty well. What do we do next? Is that a good place to start, or are there other good places to start? So, Tony, why don't you start, and then, Mark, you go from there.
I find that people get SVCs when they're buying new disk arrays, and the SVC helps them move the data onto the new disk array to get advantage of the new technology. If you bought a DS8000 and you have an older ESS model, for example, you want to take advantage of the faster performance and the capabilities of DS8000 right away. You don't want to wait over the next 4 or 5 months when you can schedule outages and time to move the data over. You get an SVC with it, and then you can start moving the data immediately and get the value of your DS8000 right away. That's one example. And the advantage of SVC is you don't have to virtualize the entire environment. You can choose to virtualize a portion of a disk array, just a handful of space on a few runs of a much bigger array that might be in use for mainframe or iSeries, and you just have a few runs that you want to try out a pilot project to see how SVC might work with a few hosts running a small application. It's very easy to get started with Fan Volume Controller.
Yeah, I'd agree, Tony. I think you hit the nail right on the head where you got change and change management issues, that's the time to plug this thing in and really learn to appreciate it. And I think the point you brought up is so important, too. This thing doesn't take over your environment. You don't have to use it for everything if you don't want to. You can be very targeted about what you're trying to do. You can limit it. You can set up test cases if you want to, or you can get it going pretty fast on real production moves if you want to. But I think that's where most people are going to learn to love this product and really get a feel for it quickly is when they're managing change.
So what have we seen in terms of from it hits the dock to getting it up and running? Tony, you've been involved in some of those.
Oh, yeah. Let me take on to that one. We have a nice feature in the Fan Volume Controller called Image Mode, which means that you can virtualize all of the data you already have in place without having to move it or reformat it or convert it into any other style of format. So you can take your existing Windows and AIX and Linux runs that are already got their file systems on there, their NTFS, their EXT2s, and put in the Fan Volume Controller and present it back to the original host that were expecting those D drives and those H disks that they were expecting to have. And at the end of the weekend, you can end up having a virtualized environment that has now a faster performance and all the capabilities of copy services and the features of the Fan Volume Controller without actually changing the LUNs that are presented to the host. And with no data movement, this can be done easily in a few hours over a weekend, you know, adding cables and putting things into racks. Then, over the course of the next few weeks, while applications are reading and writing data, and during the daytime during the week, you can now move things around, stripe things for better performance, or make those conversions that you might want, moving data from more expensive disk to less expensive disk or from slower disk to faster disk. Whatever you want to do now can be done non-disruptively without anyone having to be involved.
You know, I think that's really interesting because it lets you get used to it and use it kind of as a regular controller, but it's almost magic because it'll go in front of anybody's disk to go in, and then you can migrate it into the environment at your own pace. So I really do like the mode that the engineers came up with that helps people take it on simply.
You know, while you were talking, Tony, I was thinking about the time to get up and running with the product. And actually, I don't know what the expectations are for install time, so maybe we can get back to that. But one thing that is interesting is I have spoken to SVC customers, and you ask them, you know, what was your plan to use this product, and what were you looking to do? And most of the time, what you find out is somebody will be undertaking a study, and they're thinking, we needed to find a way to do this faster because we were growing so quickly and we're having problems, and we were spending lots of extra hours in here managing storage, and it was really getting old. And so we started a study to solve this problem, and we brought in a SAN volume controller, and we had initially planned, you know, to do a study for 2 months. And they'll say things like, and we ended up going production in 3 weeks, 2 weeks, something like that, right? That the time it took them to get a confidence level in the product after bringing in and turning it into production was much, much faster than what they had initially planned. I think that's a big deal. So, Tony, can you help me understand real quickly how you bring this up and get it functioning in somebody's SAN?
Oh, yeah, simply. Obviously, it's supported in 19-inch racks, so you put in the SAN volume controller components into the existing rack that you have. It's so many U's high that you need to have space in your racks. You connect it to your SAN fabric, your switch or director from McData, Brocade, Cisco, whoever vendor you have. And we use standard SAN fabric, so it uses your existing infrastructure in that case. You do have to change the zoning. So instead of the host being zoned directly to the disk array, you now are creating two separate zones. The host is zoned to the SAN volume controller, and the SAN volume controller is going to be the disk array, so to speak, to the host. And then you zone the SAN volume controller to the disk array, and in that case, the SAN volume controller looks like the host to the disk array. So the disk array is getting tricked, the host is getting tricked, and the SAN volume controller is doing the magic in between. The multipathing driver that we provide, SDD, is optional. We also support MPIO, Veritas's DMP, Hewlett-Packard's PV-Links, and so there's a variety of existing multipathing drivers that if you're already using, you don't have to make any changes for. If you do have to make a change for, you might have to stop the application so you can upgrade the multipathing driver and possibly any firmware on the host bus adapters. But other than that, that's a minimal downtime for that process.
That sounds slick. Very, very slick. Yeah, thanks.
So we've kind of talked a lot about value, and we've now talked a bit about how you get started. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, okay, sometimes when you get these really cool disruptive technologies which change the way people work, one of the key things is how fast and how well are they being updated. So from my perspective, one of the things I like about the way we introduced the SAN volume controller is it is introduced with maintenance and support that lasts for 3 years, and you're automatically entitled to the updates when you buy it, just like if you bought, you know, any other software product that IBM did, despite the fact that this one happens to work in a rack. What else are we up to, Tony? What are the next things coming up? And maybe starting with what are the cool things in the current release and then what's coming up?
Well, the SVC 3.1 we just announced in October a few months ago, doubled the cache, put in faster processors. We're taking advantage of the economies of expertise. That is, we already have smart people designing servers in the X-Series world that already have worked out all of the design issues, the fans, the power supplies, all of that stuff. So we can then focus our efforts on the value-added functionality of the SVC. We won't have to invent a new piece of hardware that would, you know, slow down the development process. In the future, we will have better mirroring capabilities, better operating system support, even more support for the various storage devices that we can connect to. So we're really excited about the functionality, the interoperability capabilities, and we're going to roll these out. It's a strategic product. So we've got stuff planned practically every 6 months, you know, for the next several years on rolling this functionality out.
Say, Tony?
Yes.
One thing that I hear from the market with growing regularity is about VMware. What's your support for VMware?
We support VMware fairly well. We have the ability to use VMware's native multipathing driver, so we don't have to do anything. And IBM is the number one seller of VMware on its X-Series platform. So So it's a good match in that we are very familiar with the VMware tool, and we're very familiar with both Windows and Linux operating systems that most people run as guests under VMware. So that's a good marriage for how SVC can tie into a VMware environment.
So, Tony, we were talking about what's coming, and, for example, we'll be doing additional functions like global mirroring, and we've also talked about interoperability for the SAN volume controller is absolutely critical because you want to go in and work in your environment today. And if I remember correctly, we're in the hundreds in, you know, hosts and HBAs and operating systems and environments we support, and a little bit under 100 in different disks that we support, which there's certainly not an infinite number of either of those, so I feel pretty good about our interoperability. So I think we've spent a lot of time here on how customers can get value, how they can get started, how getting started really works, and the fact that this is not, you know, fluff or PowerPoint, where this is proven technology that folks are using every day. So, Mark, let me throw it back to you and ask if there's anything else that you would want customers to think about or to know as they're getting started to determine whether they should use virtualization.
Yeah, and it's sort of a nuts and bolts technology acquisition point, I think. And that is, this is the perfect product for businesses that have requirements for second sources of storage. You can create compatibility amongst different vendors and be able to buy storage from multiple vendors, and that works. It works fantastically well for that. That really goes with the philosophy that IBM has to storage. And you also mentioned way back, Laura, about openness, right? There's no company that is on the forefront like IBM creating open environments for storage, and that open environments means I can buy second sources of products if I need to, and it makes my purchasing department happy too.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting perspective, because a lot of times technology that's different or disruptive is very expensive. This has actually has a very low entry point. I believe it's between $35,000 and $40,000. And also you can very easily show a TCO to prove that this will not only increase your uptime but actually lower your costs. So quite a good value proposition there. So, Tony, before I wrap up, was there anything else that you wanted to add, as you've been out in many, many customers that have been both getting started and implementing a SAN volume controller?
The TCO concept that you mentioned, a lot of people find that when they get the SAN volume controller, they increase the storage utilization of the disk that they've had for all this time. But they only use 30, 40, 50% of the utilization, but with SAN volume controller, being able to pool the storage together, make it more accessible and flexible to expand on as-needed basis, people have been able to increase their utilization rates, which helps them to defer buying more storage later on. That's going to save them money because disk actually drops in price year to year. So that's a good point about the TCO.
Yeah, right. And it's not only the price of the disk, it's the cost to manage it. And if you can simplify that, that's a very good thing. So before we wrap up and go to Q&A, I guess the way I'd like to leave it is the thing that I really think about when I think about virtualization is freedom. It's freedom to disconnect the application from the infrastructure, and it's also freedom to choose. It doesn't lock you into any particular disk vendor and allows you to also choose when and how things happen inside your business. So with that, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to us, and we look forward to hearing your questions.
You have been listening to an IBM webcast on storage virtualization. If you would like to hear more of this webcast, please visit ibm.com/storage/podcast and follow the Storage Virtualization webcast links. Thank you for listening.